This episode is brought to you by Garden Cult, Garden Design and Coaching. For a 15% discount on virtual garden consultations and coaching sessions, use code HRN15. Learn more at gardencult.com.
Good food is worth a thousand words. Hi, this is Aarti Menon, and I'm delighted to share a new podcast with you. My Family Recipe, from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network. Each episode of My Family Recipe brings you a cherished heirloom recipe and the story behind it, from voices across the world of food. Join us as we explore experiences of loss and remembering, accompanied by homemade baked ziti, and chronicles of comfort and celebration paired with the perfect chocolate cake. I'll interview writers and chefs, parents and children, about what's passed down along with the foods that we know and love. Adapted from Food 52's much-loved column of the same name, the My Family Recipe podcast will bring its pages to life. I grew up literally hanging off the petticoat tails of three generations of Indian matriarchs who used food to speak their everyday language of love. As a result, I've always reached for the human side of recipes and food traditions. As the editor of the essay series, I work with writers to explore the histories behind these passed down dishes, but also what they mean for the present and our futures. I'm so excited to dig deeper into the stories and voices behind them. Subscribe to My Family Recipe from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you like to listen. Cherished dishes and delicious stories coming this fall.
Hola familia, bienvenidos, welcome to a very exciting episode of Cooking in Mexican from A to Z. We're launching our third season, and we thought it would be very apropos and very, I think, significant to start season three with
the two of us,
and also exactly, mom, and starting with something that I think is so important is actually the foundation of what you and I believe in is Mexican cooking techniques and flavor principles, right? Or you like to call them building blocks, mom. Let's talk a little bit about that and how you came up with that idea, mom.
When I first went to teach at the Culinary Institute in Napa, you know, it was for a consulting job for Marriott Hotels. Mm-hmm. And they were bringing in the GMs, the directors of food and beverage, and the executive chefs. So I wanted to give them a total journey into what Mexican food is. And I wanted to give them recipes that they could use in non-traditional Mexican foods. So what I did was that I broke up, let's say, pico de gallo, you know, the fresh salsa, and you can take that, learn how to make it perfectly with all those wonderful, exciting flavors and everything, and take it, saute it, and beat some eggs in, and cook it quickly with tortilla chips, and you have huevos a la mexicana.
Yep.
Or you can take that sauce, put butter or oil on it, add spices, and put fish in it, and cook my red snapper hash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and or you can take zucchini, cut it up nicely, and then put the pico de gallo in the pan, and then cook it, and then you've got this fresh zucchini with all this fresh flavors.
Yeah.
So that's just one of the building blocks
that
I like to use, and it's great for people who don't know how to cook a lot, but have to cook, you know, and so they can make one recipe and then use it in different ways.
Yeah. So in essence, that base recipe spawns a bunch of other different directions that a home cook or even a professional could take. And first of all, I think it's really smart because you're cross-utilizing ingredients. So it's very efficient as far as making sure that recipe and the time that you take to produce that can go in many different directions, right? So, and I think it's also a beautiful tool to teach corporations like Marriott to be consistent and throughout the flavor profiles and things that they need to teach to their staff. So it makes a lot of sense. Let's talk a little bit.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course, Mom. My second book is very much inspired by that whole ethos of having these flavor bases and flavor profiles that can go into many different directions. And my second book, Simple Food, Big Flavor, is a lot of that, which is inspired by you, Mom.
Thank you.
Of course. So when you're talking about the building blocks, let's talk about the ingredients that sort of make up that Mesoamerican diet, and you know, those ingredients that are the foundation, the pillars of how to make all these wonderful traditional Mexican recipes, right? Let's talk a little bit about what those are. What would have Cortez encountered when he landed in the port of Veracruz in 1519, right, Mom? What were some of the things that he would have saw in a market?
He would have seen zucchini. He would have seen different kinds of green chilies. He would have seen tomatoes. No limes. No oranges. Anything like that. We would have corn, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just beans. Mm-hmm. Let's see. No potatoes, because the potatoes came later.
Chilies, cacao.
So, and then they were bringing all their own ingredients. So they get there with them. Mm-hmm. And they combined them with what they found, and the new cuisine was born.
Yes. And let's talk a little bit about the protein sources, right? So we're talking about, I mean, if you wanted to say in a brief synopsis, what are those, that Mesoamerican diet? We're talking about corn, tomatoes, chiles, squashes, corn, cacao. Those are the things that are you know, the basis of a lot of the traditional recipes, right? But let's talk about the protein sources. What do indigenous people in Mesoamerica really eat at that time? Because what we think of now as a Mexican menu or cuisine is very much different based on the proteins. Let's talk about that.
They would eat bugs, honey.
Yeah.
Like Dr. Bugs said in our thing, they would eat a lot of bugs. They would eat some wild, hare or maybe deer, but it was actually a plant-based diet. Mm-hmm. You know, which I asked this man, a Mije indigenous person, and I said, how is the crisis affecting you? Because it was during one of the usual crises. And he said, it doesn't affect me at all, because we eat are beans, chili, tortillas, and there's always plenty of that.
Yeah.
So they were able to sustain, they were able to sustain themselves very well without the protein.
Yeah. And it's funny, we talk with a lot of Tio, who I live with, Tio Mario, and he was, we were vegans out of necessity, okay? You know what I mean? Yeah. We always had frijoles, arroz, tortillas, and salsa at the house. And Tio would tell me that they would only really have protein on the weekends, whether it was a sopa of chicken or beef or something, to kind of have this more extended meal. So I just found that very interesting. You know, the original vegan diet.
People do go back to that, because it's so satisfying. Because you have the chilies provide all the vitamins. The tomatoes, have vitamin C. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's a really wonderful diet. But there's so many other flavors that make up this this building block culture that I have. Mm-hmm. Do you have any particular building blocks that you use all the time?
Well, yeah. I mean, Mom, for me, I know that you've had that really beautiful chipotle base that you use, right? And yours is very mm-hmm. simple, right? Yours is just chipotle and garlic, right? Or talk to me a little bit.
And oregano.
And oregano.
Mexican oregano. Mm. Yeah. And that is one of the things that I use the most, because it's so simple to make. You just take a can of chipotles, but first put it in the food processor, let's say. One or two garlic cloves with a teaspoon of salt. Whirl that around. Add the can of chipotles with juice and all. Whirl it around. And then, with your hands, go like that with the oregano so mm-hmm. it releases the aroma. And then you mix it again, and then you start pouring a little bit of olive oil or other oil into the thing. And then when it's at the right texture, you take it out, and you can use it infinite ways.
Yeah.
For instance, that salmon that I make, which is salmon is not a fish that is native to Mexico or mm-hmm. anything. So the thing is that that's how I started doing this for you. grill smoke it. You cook it in a grill and then cover it with a baking tray to capture the smoke.
Yep.
But, you know, eventually just turn into like a broiled dish or a grilled dish, you know, broiled dish or simply grill. So you just put the paste on it, but a little bit of olive oil, and you grill it. But then you take more paste and make a mayonnaise, you know, with it. Take them like an aioli. And you know, and then you might have like some jicama salad and everything, and have added to a little bit of vinaigrette. So you have another layer of flavor, you know. So it is infinitely versatile. That I always have that in the refrigerator.
Yeah, I mean, Mom, that was one of your iconic dishes at your namesake restaurant, Sarelas, which opened in 1987, which brought these flavors and these building blocks and ingredients and cooking techniques that a lot of the New York audience and frankly the United States had not seen. If you ask me what are some of my flavor bases, I actually took a lot of inspiration from yours and changed it ever so slightly to it's called Chipotle Love. And basically what I go ahead and do is take some garlic cloves and confit them in some neutral oil till they're nice and nutty and caramelized. And then I take that with a can of chipotle, lime zest, okay? Not fresh lime zest. And then I take a nice a bushel of a lot of the stems of the cilantro and buzz that up with the residual oil. So I like that roasted garlic flavor with the roasted kind of smoky chipotle. So I use that. It's a little bit deeper, and the idea of the garlic and the lime zest kind of wakes it up a little bit. So that's how I riffed off of that one.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
And what do you use it on?
Oh, obviously a chicken marinade would be the most ideal thing. You know, if you're doing half spatchcock chicken, let that sit for 6 to 12 hours. And then you have a really beautiful marinade. Do it, cook it off direct heat, almost to kind of slow roast it in a barbecue, and you really can't go wrong with that. And then you can hack that up. You can add that to mayonnaise with some lime juice and make a chipotle mayo. You can add extra citrus and make a vinaigrette with it. So it's very versatile, as you can imagine.
Well, I've been cooking with a lot because, you know, we just launched our new website. It's www.sarela.com. And we've been cooking a lot of different things, and I discovered a lot of little tricks your mama, my mother, used to do, you know, as far as cooking techniques.
What are some of those?
The one that really blew my mind, actually, was I was making this beef with green chili, because I get it fresh at an outrageous price from Hatch, New Mexico, because there's nothing like that green chili, you know, from Hatch. It's such a particular flavor, whether it's dried or fresh. And you're sauteing onions, and all of a sudden she stops and makes a roux in the middle of that and mixes it into the onions that are cooking, and because you make them a little crusty, you know, because of the roux, and added a whole other layer of flavor. And then the other thing she used to always do was she would always, at the end of a dish, she would always grind up some garlic and put a little bit of water and put it in the dish. So you always had the flavor of the raw garlic.
And the water will help take some of its abrasiveness away. You know what I mean? Because a lot of people, whether working with onions or garlic, sometimes like to temper the aggressive flavor with either vinegar, water, and salt to kind of calm it down. But that makes a lot of sense.
I know. It's wonderful. I mean, it just livens everything up. So it's like, I'm writing down the things that she used to do. She wouldn't put any herbs like that would be too strident, and she would make a tea, like a bay leaf tea, and then add it a little bit at a time until she had the exact flavor that she wanted. You know, she was a natural cook and a natural singer and a natural pianist and a natural everything. She had a lot of talent there.
What really differentiates, I think, your cuisine from Mema's was I think very resourceful in the sense that she would use bouillon, right? Use bouillon as a flavor principle. And then, you know, she had that great recipe for like a pork loin with prunes and Coca-Cola and chile. Like this, I thought it was very reflective of the time that she was cooking in, where you had to be resourceful and all that.
Well, especially at the ranch.
Yeah.
You know, even though we had this, I have an article up on my website called My Mother's Pantry. Mm-hmm. And we had this pantry, you would go in, and then she had this big metal, you know, trash can full of pastas mm-hmm. and, you know, kind of. But then when you started looking at the shelves, she had all the French stuff. She had, like, shelves for escargot. And she had, you know, all this wonderful things. Then she had the Italian things. And then she had the Chinese, because we always used to make chop suey, you know. And you know, so there were always, like bamboo slices and all this kind of stuff. So, and remember, this was, like, in the 50s. So that she was making all this stuff, you know, all the time was amazing, you know, because she had all the ingredients on hand.
Yeah, she was revolutionary in the sense that, you know, a lot of canned products, obviously. The ranch is kind of remote, right? So, you know, you maybe go into town, what, once a month, Mom, and get supplies and all of the larder, if you will, right? And then bring it back. So you had to use what you had. And obviously you had that beautiful abundance of beef and different sort of livestock that you had on the ranch. But I thought Mama was so forward thinking in the idea of introducing you guys to different cuisines of the world. And I thought that was really special.
Oh, yes, she was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I just did a really nice podcast with this company called, this website called Eat Darling Eat. Mm. And it's about mothers and daughters. And the thing is that I said, well, in our family, it would not be Eat Darling Eat. It would be Don't Eat Darling, Don't Eat. You know, but the thing is that, you know, there were all these beautiful stories about it. I used that podcast to talk about how she taught us manners and how they wanted us to learn how to tell stories and mm-hmm. and be engaged in the meal, and how she set the table with linen, you know, tablecloth napkins, mm-hmm. china, her blue Delft china. So it was, at the ranch, there wasn't much to do except enjoy wonderful food.
Absolutely. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I think you instilled that into Rodrigo and I, as far as being able to sit down, enjoy a meal, understand the part of the sobremesa afterwards, the conversation. I thought that's something that I carried through this day. You know, I was very kind of anxious and nervous when I was younger. And now I've completely done a 180. And now I'm very very calm and take my time with everything. So I have you to thank for that.
This episode is brought to you by Garden Cult, Garden Design and Coaching. Carmen DeVito is a professional garden designer, certified New York State landscape professional, and the founder of Garden Cult. You may also know her from HRN's home gardening videos and our series, We Dig Plants. Garden Cult is a culmination of Carmen's more than two decades of experience designing and building gardens in New York City. Carmen believes that gardens and outdoor spaces should be healthy, environmentally sustainable places that enhance the health of people, nature, and the planet. She knows how to help you maximize the space you've got, help you work with and make the most of the materials, plants, and trees that you already have, and create an outdoor place to use and enjoy for you and your family. Get started at gardencult.com. For a 15% discount on virtual garden consultations and coaching sessions, use code HRN15 through September 30th, 2021. That's code HRN15 at gardencult.com.
So, Mom, we've talked a lot about the, you know, the ingredients, right? What really sort of constitutes the Mesoamerican Mexican diet as far as ingredients? We've touched upon it, from the tomatoes to the corn to the chiles to the cacao, you know, all the wonderful fresh herbs. Now we have these flavor bases, right? These building blocks, the cooking techniques. How do we utilize those, right? So one of them that I've always been such a fan of what you do is the roasted poblano, onion, and garlic, right? So how do you utilize those? What are some of the dishes that are rendered from that beautiful base?
Well, I could make a huitlacoche soup with it. Add the huitlacoche saute with that.
Mm-hmm.
I can you know, stuff a fillet. That's what I served at the Williamsburg Economic Summit, mm-hmm. when I cooked there in 1983. I served this fillet that you butterfly,
mm-hmm.
and then stuff it with a rajas and a little slice of cheese,
mm-hmm.
and it's grilled. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes puree them and make a delicious poblano sauce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could take the, you know, you can, yeah, and maybe with some fried vegetables or like the cauliflower. So I mean,
But what was the one dish that everybody would come to Sarela's, your namesake restaurant, and ask for?
The rice
was kind of. Next level.
The chilaquiles.
And the chilaquiles. But what was in the rice, Mom?
It was corn, rice, Uncle Ben's. It had to be Uncle Ben's, mm. or another converted rice. Mm. And then you sautéed poblano, chopped onion and garlic,
mm.
mixed that in. Then it had sour cream mixed with chopped cilantro and onion.
Mm.
So just think of all these layers, and then the cheese.
Yes, of course.
So when you bite into this thing, you have crunchy, you have tangy, and you have spicy, and you have creamy, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful dish.
Yeah, and it uses that flavor base, right, Mom? That building block, as you said. So just those are four beautiful examples of how to use that beautiful mixture of the rajas, right? The onion, the garlic, the roasted poblano, all cut together and used in many different ways. You know, as I'm thinking about that, I'm like, wow, how I've used that at Johnny Sanchez in my restaurant in New Orleans. Well, I've taken the rajas and done that very simply over a grilled hanger steak, over a mesquite, and used that. Yeah, it's just like a simple catalyst for taco, right? So we make beautiful homemade flour tortillas, and have that, and then we serve all the fixings on the side, right? And I think that's one beautiful example of just how to keep it very simple and straightforward. So we take a lot of pride in that. And then also sometimes we'll chop up that mixture, Mom, the roasted poblano, the onions and the garlic, and chop it fine and put it into a queso dip, right? You know,
or
a fundido, if you could, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Roasted kind of cheese casserole. You can do that as well. So there's many different directions you can take with that particular building block, you know. So
there's so many different green chilies that the thing is that each one is going to be completely different.
Absolutely,
the poblano will be, you know, and then the hatch. I mean, I'm still in love with the hatch and the northern green chilies. It's too bad that we can't get them here in New York.
Yeah, well, you can get them frozen, and it's not the same, but. You know, for anybody that's not familiar with the hatch chiles, they're beautiful. They're, you know, native to the northern part of Mexico, all throughout the Southwest. You go to even like a Walmart in New Mexico, and you go out there during the fall, September, October, and you'll see them roast hatch green chiles in the parking lot, right? And you walk off with this beautiful bag of roasted green chiles, and there's nothing more magical than that, right, Mom?
I always have them in the freezer.
Yeah.
And you know where else is really, really good to use that is in like a beef picadillo.
Yes, indeed.
You know, put it in, and it's wonderful.
So a beef picadillo, you know, so right?
A
ground beef, seared onion, garlic, some beautiful aromatics. Sometimes if you want to do traditional, right, Mom, you would do olives maybe perhaps in there or potato. There's made. One variation of the picadillo, but there's many differences. Yeah.
And then the other building block that we haven't talked about. I just did this project for Acorda. You know, this company that makes a medication that has helped me a lot,
mm-hmm.
with my condition.
Mm-hmm.
I have Parkinson's for 33 years,
mm-hmm.
and I've done really well with it. But I worked on the building blocks because I thought that would be a really good way to teach people how to cook, because people with Parkinson's have trouble cooking and moving with their hands and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing that I did is that tomatillo sauce.
Yeah.
You know, the green tomatillo, the fresh sauce, everybody loves. These three things are three of the favorite flavors of the foreign people who eat Mexican food. Chipotle, tomatillo, and the salsa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you can take a tomatillo and make, you know, wonderful, put an avocado in it and make a sort of low calorie guacamole. Mm-hmm. You know, the other day somebody came here to the house for this party that I made, and they brought bocconcini.
Wow.
Bocconcini, and I put it in the tomatillo sauce.
Wow, that sounds great.
And it was like it was just a tiny little quick appetizer, you know, so you can, I also started cooking rice or quinoa with it. You know, you brown the rice, and then you add the raw tomatillo sauce.
Yeah.
And then the chicken stock, and it's tangy and it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's another building block that I absolutely love.
I love that, Mom. So we talked a little bit about, you know, the salsas, of course, the different things. The recados, right, which is another one of those kind of building blocks of flavors, which is sort of those spice paste and mixtures that you get from Quintana Roo or the Yucatan region in Mexico, which are great, right? They make them with achote traditionally for the wonderful heralded cochinita pibil.
There's also recaudo.
Yeah, recaudo. Yeah,
recaudo.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, you know, that's another thing my mom used to make. She used to make chicken stock, and then she would saute onion, tomato, and garlic, add it to the stock, and then it would become a totally different, completely flavorful, wonderful thing. And the recaudos are used a lot in the cooking.
Yes.
They're like your mirepoix.
Yes, indeed. And I love that. And the idea of the adobos, right? So an adobo can be many different things. You know, adobo traditionally is a wet marinade, but now you're finding marinades, adobos that are just spice mixtures, right? If you would take it like a rub, for instance, right? But at its heart, in its essence, an adobo is a wet marinade that has beautiful spices and chilies and aromatics and put to different meats. What are some of those adobos that spoke to you initially, Mom?
I remember during the Christmas season, year we would fatten up this pig. And then right before Christmas, we would slaughter it and give one leg to the cowboys and then we would break up the other one and make chorizo, carne adobada, which is probably my favorite thing to make with chili paste. You know, in Oaxaca, they do the cecina. Well, carne adobada are thin slices of pork. You slather this marinade on it, this adobo, and then sprinkle it with chili seeds. And then hang it up to air dry.
That's a cecina.
You know, for a day or two.
Yeah.
We call it carne adobada.
And that's different, you know, and it's beautiful. Yeah. And I think when you have, and also you're taking, in essence, not maybe the best quality meat, perhaps, but adding a huge impact of flavor and exactly. To kind of uplift it and take it to that next level, right?
So. And you could also use it as a seasoning, you know, the adobo, because they say that you have a soup cooking and you wanna add the extra flavor. I like to have it in the refrigerator in little ice cube trays. Different things that I can just take out and put it in the soup pot or whatever I'm making, and it's just the right amount of spiciness. But you know, you have to be very careful when you're making an adobo not to burn any part of it, because it makes everything bitter.
And also not burning the adobo once it's been marinated. So, you know, if you're gonna put it on chicken, for instance,
exactly,
and it has skin on it, right? You don't want to do direct heat. You want to do off the heat, put it on that rack up there, cover it, and let it cook, because you can burn that adobo on the actual product. So I think that's also very important to mention. When you have those dry chilies and all those different flavors, they're very susceptible to being charred and kind of bitter and overcooked. So you got to be very mindful how you do that. I agree.
Well, you can also take the adobo and thin it and make it into a sauce for chilaquiles, or enchiladas.
Great. Well, Mom, let's talk a little bit as we conclude. Let's talk a little bit about the website, your website, sarela.com. What are some of the new additions that you've done on it? What can all of our fans look forward to? And that's a differentiating point from what was there to what you're doing now on the website.
Well, first of all, it's organized. Mm-hmm. But I have this area called Sarela's Mind. And that there I talk about trips that I've taken. I have beautiful eulogies for my friends who have died, like Bud Schulberg and Diana, and, you know, just honoring them. And I have traditions there, cultural traditions, celebrations in Mexico. Then I have living well with Parkinson's, because my goal right now is to teach people that you can live well with this horrible disease and be fulfilled and be successful, but you have to really want it with all your heart, you know, to do it. And then I have another one called Lifestyle, where I have menus and I have fun stories like that, you know. So it's like entertaining ideas, things about setting tables and that kind of stuff. So it's a totally different thing from the other one. It's beautifully designed.
Yeah, it's all-encompassing, Mom. You're talking about lifestyle. You're talking about cultural experiences, personal experiences, recipes, extremely, almost your love of anthropology and your deep dive into the research of Mexican culture and food. So your website really offers all of that. So you can't just say it's a chef's website. It's something that is so much bigger. It is really a love letter to your life, to your appreciation of your culture, your family, and all the experiences that you've been through. So I think that's beautiful.
That's beautiful, honey. Thank you so much.
Of course. Yeah.
I'm so proud of you.
I'm all right. I'm getting better. When I was a kid and I was a little bit challenging, they would ask my mom, hey, Aaron, ¿cómo está? Mejorando. He's improving. How's Aaron doing? He's getting better.
Yeah.
But the whole point is, for everybody that's having, you know, because I have the Aaron Sanchez Scholarship Fund, right, where I put Latino kids into culinary school. I know a lot of them have worked with you, Mom, and have been mentored by you, and they consider some of that the most valuable time they've ever spent. And my point is that don't ever give up on a kid. You know, our youth is the most valuable commodity that we have, and don't give up on children and youth. You know, we might be misguided or misled, but there's always that potential. And that's why, you know, it's so important. You helped me find that, whether it was Outward Bound or coming to work with Chef Paul Prudhomme. You know, you knew that importance.
And I didn't push you too much in school because I knew that wasn't your thing.
Indeed. Yeah. But it was all good. You know, I turned out all right, I guess.
Usually the ones that give you the more trouble are the ones that turn out the best.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, you don't want that, like, atypical kid. There's something suspicious about that.
Remember when Rodrigo would not do it, you know, Aaron has a twin brother. And Rodrigo would not break the law for anything in the world. And sometimes I would bribe him, and he'd say, one day I'm going to remind you that you bribed me to break the law. When we were going into Roosevelt Island to be photographed at that. Because it said, no trespassing. And no trespassing. And so one day he went to Dalton. And then one day they called me from the school to tell me that he had got into a horrible fight. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I said, thank God. I'm so happy that he finally got into trouble.
Exactly. Well, for me, it was like I had too much trouble.
Yeah.
But it was so good. Talk about some contrasting personalities, right?
I know.
Yeah. Yeah, Mom. So, again, we encourage everybody. I mean, this is the launch of our new season, season 3 for Cooking in Mexico from A to Z, of course, on Heritage Radio Network. We couldn't be happier from their support and their partnership for making this dream, honestly, of my mom and I working together, sharing something that's so intimate and personal to us as our Mexican culture and food, as you can imagine, with the intention of making you guys fans and embracing our cuisine and our culture and loving it and cooking it at home and telling everybody you know about it. So I hope you guys have enjoyed this. I know I'm excited to what's going to come. We're going to have a lot of really awesome guests coming up on season 3. We're going to be talking about tequila. What else are we going to be talking about, Mom? Just to give them a little prompt.
Popcorn. We're going to talk about popcorn. Yeah. Okay. Because there's Rafael Mier, who is the president of this consortium dedicated to the revival of the Mexican tortilla. The tortilla consumption has gone down 40% in Mexico. So it's like a real tragedy. Mm-hmm. But he's been trying to, you know, because he works with corn all the time, he has found this popping corn. So we're going to talk about that. Mm-hmm. We've had Paula Lambert talk about Mexican style cheeses here. We're going to have an expert talking about the crema and all the dairy products, Carlos Yescas. Ricardo Muñoz Zurita talking about seafood.
And then we're going to have Jonathan Waxman talking about the Calmex sort of vibe that happened very early on in the late 70s or mid 70s, about that influence of Cal Mexican cuisine, which is going to be fun. There's a lot of good stuff coming. Please make sure that you guys continue to support Cooking in Mexico from A to Z on Heritage Radio Network. We thank you all for listening and your constant support. I'm Aaron Sanchez, alongside my beautiful mother,
Sarela Martinez.
Muchísimas gracias. Abrazos a todos. Los esperemos ahí. Gracias. Thank you.
Cooking in Mexican from A to Z is powered by Simple Cast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without your support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like. Tell your friends and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.